Good afternoon and welcome to the Candel Therapeutics conference call, where the company will be discussing top-line results of its phase III prostate cancer clinical trial following the 2025 American Society of Clinical Oncology oral presentation, with subsequent Q&A from Candel management and their guests, thought leader physicians. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Following the company's formal remarks, we will open the call for questions. Please be advised that this call is being recorded. You can find the information on the replay of the call and further information related to today's announcement on the Candel Therapeutics website at candeltx.com. At this time, I would like to turn the call over to Ted Jenkins, Vice President, Investor Relations and Business Development at Candel Therapeutics. Mr. Jenkins, please go ahead.
Thank you, Operator. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us on today's call. Earlier today, the company's top-line results from its phase III trial of CAN-2409 in patients with intermediate to high-risk localized prostate cancer was presented in an oral presentation at the 2025 American Society of Clinical Oncology's annual meeting. Given the importance of this event, we thought it'd be useful to conduct a public follow-up call with insights and Q&A from leading prostate cancer specialists who were principal investigators on the phase III clinical trial. Before we begin, I'd like to remind you that during this call, management will make forward-looking statements, including statements about Candel's future business and development plans, expectations regarding the potential efficacy and commercial potential of Candel's product candidates, the anticipated timing of communications with regulatory agencies, the potential learnings from preclinical studies and other clinical data, the ability of the phase III trial to inform and improve future clinical development plans, and Candel's ability to advance its product candidates into later stages of development. Forward-looking statements are subject to numerous risks and uncertainties, many of which are beyond our control, including the risks and uncertainties I've described here and those described from time to time in our filings with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. Our results may differ materially from those discussed on today's call, and we undertake no obligation to update statements regarding the future or to confirm these statements in relation to actual results unless required by law. Joining us on the call today from the company to discuss these results are Dr. Paul Peter Tak, our President and Chief Executive Officer, Dr. Garrett Nichols, our Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Francesca Barone, our Chief Scientific Officer, Sue Stort, our Chief Regulatory Officer, and Dr. Seshu Tyagarajan, our Chief Technical and Development Officer, and Charles Schoch, our Interim Chief Financial Officer. We're also pleased to introduce two leading prostate cancer specialists as guest speakers who were principal investigators of the phase III study: Dr. John E. Sylvester from the Atlantic Urology Clinics in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and Dr. Ronald S. Tutrone, National Medical Director of Clinical Research at the United Urology Group in Towson, Maryland. Following the prepared remarks, we will open the line for questions for Candel management and our guest speakers. With that, I'd like to turn the call over to Candel CEO, Dr. Paul Peter Tak. Paul Peter?
Thank you, Ted, and thank you all for joining us this morning. We are pleased to reflect on our positive top-line results from our phase III clinical trial of CAN-2409 in intermediate to high-risk localized prostate cancer, and we are honored that the phase III abstract was selected for oral presentation at this year's ASCO annual meeting. The treatment goal for men with clinically significant non-metastatic prostate cancer is the prevention of cancer recurrence while minimizing treatment-related side effects. In patients managed with initial radiotherapy, local control is critical because of the known increased risk of local disease progression, metastatic disease, and prostate cancer-related mortality after prolonged follow-up in patients with tumor recurrence. In addition, after tumor recurrence, salvage therapies, including androgen deprivation therapy, are associated with side effects and impaired quality of life. There's still a significant unmet need, as about 30% of the patients will develop recurrent disease despite standard of care radical prostatectomy or radiotherapy. Therefore, the objective of our study was to evaluate whether CAN-2409, when added to standard of care radiotherapy, could reduce the risk of prostate cancer recurrence, as this is expected to improve disease outcome and reduce the need for salvage therapies in the future. Our phase III clinical trial in patients with intermediate to high-risk localized prostate cancer demonstrated statistically significant improvement in disease-free survival in patients who received CAN-2409 plus prodrug combined with standard of care radiotherapy, compared to those who received placebo plus standard of care radiation therapy. We also showed statistically significant improvement for the secondary endpoints. The findings from this pivotal trial are consistent with previous observations of clinical activity of CAN-2409 in difficult-to-treat solid tumors, often resistant to immunotherapy, building on the recent success of our clinical trials in non-small cell lung cancer and pancreatic ductal adenocarcinoma. Together, this data supports the pan-solid tumor potential of our viral immunotherapy platform to address significant unmet needs in multiple cancers. It is also important to note that the phase III study was conducted under a special protocol assessment agreed with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, meaning that the data from this study could be sufficient for the company to seek regulatory approval for CAN-2409 in intermediate to high-risk localized prostate cancer. Based on these results and CAN-2409's recent FDA Regenerative Medicine Advanced Therapy designation, RMAT, we have expanded initial discussions with the FDA regarding the regulatory pathway for CAN-2409. We are committed to bringing this important therapy to prostate cancer patients. Now, let me turn the call over to Dr. Garrett Nichols, our Chief Medical Officer, who will provide a review of the oral presentation from earlier today at ASCO. Garrett?
Thank you, Paul Peter. I'll now walk through the ASCO presentation made earlier today in Chicago of our phase III clinical trial of CAN-2409 in patients with newly diagnosed intermediate to high-risk localized prostate cancer. Next slide. The key takeaways were that CAN-2409 plus prodrug significantly reduced the risk of disease recurrence or death by 30%, with a highly significant p-value of 0.0155 compared with placebo when added to standard of care radiation therapy in patients with intermediate to high-risk localized prostate cancer. CAN-2409 could thus offer a potential paradigm shift in the treatment of patients with intermediate to high-risk localized prostate cancer who seek curative treatment upon diagnosis. Next slide. As you know, prostate cancer is one of the most common forms of cancer globally, with over 200,000 new cases of localized intermediate to high-risk disease in the United States alone each year. Over 40% of men with intermediate to high-risk localized disease elect radiotherapy with the goal of cure while minimizing effects on their quality of life. Next slide. CAN-2409 is an investigational multimodal immunotherapy that has demonstrated potent activity in preclinical studies and early-phase clinical trials in prostate cancer. After intratumoral injection, the replication-defective adenovirus vector delivers the herpes simplex virus thymidine kinase gene into tumor cells. This gene converts the prodrug valacyclovir into a nucleotide analog that incorporates into the DNA of replicating tumor cells, a mechanism that is synergistic with DNA-damaging radiotherapy. Localized cytolysis combined with pro-inflammatory adenoviral particles result in immunization against the tumor and long-term anti-tumor immunity. Next slide. After promising phase I and phase II clinical trials, we conducted a phase III clinical trial of CAN-2409 with current standard of care dose intense 78 gray or higher external beam radiotherapy. 745 patients were enrolled and randomized 2:1 to receive either three injections of CAN-2409 into the prostate gland, each followed by a 14-day course of valacyclovir, or three injections of placebo, each followed by a 14-day course of valacyclovir. Randomization was stratified by NCCN risk group and the use of short-term androgen deprivation therapy, or ADT. The primary endpoint was disease-free survival, defined as the time to cancer recurrence or death due to any cause. The key secondary endpoints included prostate-specific disease-free survival, the proportion of patients achieving a prostate-specific antigen, or PSA, nadir of less than 0.2 nanograms per mL, and pathologic complete response in two-year biopsies. Next slide. CAN-2409 is delivered in a routine and generally well-tolerated outpatient procedure by urologists or radiation oncologists. A total of 2 mL of adenovirus vector is delivered into each of the four quadrants of the prostate gland with ultrasound guidance and a small needle, ensuring broad biodistribution. The adenoviral vector does not require a complex cold chain and does not require special handling precautions. Next slide. We screened 774 patients and randomized 745 patients 2-to-1 to CAN-2409 or placebo. Comparable numbers did not complete treatment when considering the 2-to-1 randomization, although adverse events leading to treatment discontinuation were actually more common on placebo. Next slide. The baseline characteristics of randomized patients were similar between treatment arms. 85% of patients had NCCN intermediate risk and Gleason grade 7 disease at baseline. Approximately 50% of patients planned to use short course ADT in both arms, and we stratify for this in the statistical analysis. Next slide. In the phase 3 study, CAN-2409 in combination with standard of care radiation with or without ADT was generally well tolerated. The most common treatment-related adverse events in the active arm were chills, fever, and flu-like illness that were low grade and resolved within 24 to 48 hours. And importantly, the incidence of treatment-related serious adverse events, serious adverse events overall, or AEs leading to treatment discontinuation were low in general and tended to be lower on CAN-2409 active treatment compared to placebo. Next slide. Here I'm showing the top-line efficacy results. In the intent-to-treat analysis of the primary DFS endpoint, CAN-2409 plus prodrug is shown in the blue curve and placebo plus prodrug in red. As you can see, the curves start to diverge at 2 years after randomization and continue to separate during follow-up with a median follow-up of 50.3 months. The hazard ratio for disease-free survival comparing the CAN-2409 arm to the placebo arm was 0.70. In other words, a 30% reduction in disease recurrence or death. The difference was significant with a p-value of 0.0155. Next slide. The majority, or 85% of the patients enrolled, had intermediate risk disease at baseline, so we also deemed it important to explore DFS outcomes in intermediate risk patients stratified by use of short-term ADT. The current NCCN guidelines for favorable risk patients specify radiotherapy without ADT, which was used in the vast majority of favorable risk patients. The hazard ratio was 0.47, or a risk reduction of 53% in these patients. For those with unfavorable risk disease, most received short-term ADT per NCCN guidelines, and the hazard ratio was 0.81, or 19% risk reduction for those patients. For patients with unfavorable risk disease who did not receive ADT, the hazard ratio was 0.72. Thus, the hazard ratio was lower than 1 in each of these key subgroups, suggesting a consistently beneficial effect of CAN-2409 compared with placebo. Next slide. CAN-2409 also demonstrated significant improvements in prostate-specific DFS. Here we show the same type of separation on the Kaplan-Meier curves, but the separation is even greater when excluding deaths due to any cause. The hazard ratio here is 0.62, which means a 38% reduction in the risk for prostate cancer recurrence or death due to prostate cancer. The difference between the CAN-2409 arm and the placebo arm is highly statistically significant with a p-value of 0.046. Next slide. Other key secondary endpoints also support the primary endpoint analysis. We saw a significant increase in the proportion of patients that achieved a PSA nadir of less than 0.2 nanograms per mL in the CAN-2409 arm compared with the placebo arm. The proportions of patients achieving that nadir were 67.1% in the CAN-2409 arm versus 58.6% in the placebo control arm. Overall survival was generally similar by treatment arm as expected, with a median follow-up of only 50.3 months in this population, because prostate cancer is often a slowly growing tumor. There were only 2 deaths due to prostate cancer through 50.3 months of follow-up. In this study, 50 patients in this elderly male patient population died due to other causes that were unrelated to treatment and that were not influenced by CAN-2409, such as cardiovascular disease and accidental death. Next slide. Consistent with these findings, CAN-2409 significantly improved the rate of pathological complete response in biopsies conducted at 2 years after the completion of radiotherapy when compared to the placebo arm. Post-treatment biopsies were centrally reviewed by at least 2 blinded independent readers. At 2 years after the completion of radiotherapy, the negative biopsy rate was higher in the CAN-2409 arm, 80.4%, compared with the placebo arm, 63.6%. And the difference was significant with a p-value of 0.0015. Next slide. This is important because previous studies have shown that 2-year biopsy results are predictive of long-term outcomes. This meta-analysis by Singh et al. Shows that a positive 2-year biopsy correlates with higher biochemical disease recurrence, higher risk for developing distant metastasis, and a higher risk of dying from prostate cancer after long-term follow-up. For this reason, the Radiation Therapy Oncology Group, or RTOG, routinely includes 2-year biopsies in their clinical trials for different radiotherapy approaches. Next slide. In conclusion, in the phase 3 trial, compared with placebo, the addition of CAN-2409 to standard of care radiation therapy significantly reduced the risk of disease recurrence or death by 30%, significantly reduced the risk of prostate cancer recurrence or prostate cancer-related death by 38%, significantly increased the proportion of patients achieving a PSA nadir of less than 0.2 nanograms per mil, and significantly improved the rate of pathological complete response in 2-year biopsies. In the phase 3 study, CAN-2409 was generally well tolerated. We believe it is important for this patient population that our results were achieved without the addition of clinically meaningful toxicities. And finally, if approved, CAN-2409 immunotherapy could represent the first new therapy for men with localized prostate cancer in over 20 years. I thank you for your attention. Paul Peter, back to you.
Thank you, Garrett, for reviewing the data. As I mentioned earlier, these data give us confidence in the potential for future progression of prostate cancer management. Before we open the lines to our guest speakers to take your questions, I want to take this opportunity to thank the patients, their families and caregivers, our clinical collaborators and advisors who participated in our clinical studies, and our team. We recognize the immense effort it takes for patients to participate in such studies with the hope of improving not only their own outcomes, but also the outcomes of future patients. None of the progress we make as drug developers would be possible without their participation and support. And we are truly inspired by our partnership with patients. We remain committed to honoring their contributions through our continued efforts to deliver meaningful solutions for difficult to treat tumors. I also want to thank our dedicated employees at Candel and acknowledge their relentless pursuit of excellence. To our loyal shareholders, we thank you for your trust and support and look forward to your continued partnership while we advance our programs. With that, I would like now to introduce you to Drs. John Sylvester and Ronald Tutrone, who will briefly share their background and discuss what these findings mean for patients. And next, we will open this up for questions. Dr. Sylvester.
Yes, hello. It's a pleasure to be here. My background is a radiation oncologist specializing in prostate cancer for about 38 years. I helped pioneer prostate brachytherapy, one of the lead investigators in the SPACOR trial, and published the white paper on 4D real-time image-guided IMRT, and I was pleased to participate in this protocol. my experience with the protocol was that it was very easy to perform, that the patients were excited to participate. They seemed to understand the whole idea of this valacyclovir prodrug combining with the virus gene to create an immune response magnified by the radiation. What especially was exciting was the patients tolerated the procedures extremely well, and they didn't have much in the way of any side effects except for low-grade fever and some chills the first 24 to 48 hours, but absolutely no increase in any GI or bowel toxicity or bladder toxicity, and the improvement in control rates were substantial. And I'd like to emphasize something that was mentioned earlier, in that while we don't have an improvement in metastatic disease-free survival or overall survival proven in this trial yet, because the follow-up's obviously quite short, the fact that if someone has a reduction in disease recurrence, that's a major improvement in their quality of life, because the vast majority of people that have disease recurrence after radiation are basically sentenced to a lifelong experience with androgen deprivation therapy with multiple complications, cardiovascular, dementia-type side effects, let alone sexual side effects. And, of course, the decrease in local recurrence rate looks like it decreases the risk of distant metastatic disease and death, according to the review articles by Singh and others.
Thank you very much. Dr. Zutrone.
Thank you. I'm Ron Cutrone, and I'm a urologist. I've been in practice for 32 years and conduct predominantly prostate cancer trials, and I was really exciting to be a part of this trial. I will dovetail on what Dr. Sylvester said about the ease of administration of this drug, but I also want to give kudos to the patients who participated in this. The main thing I tell my patients who are undergoing radiation is that it does have about a 30% recurrence rate. And this technology can be game-changing in the field in that it can reduce their risk of recurrence by over 30%. Patients who did the trial had to agree to having a biopsy at 2 years after being treated, which we don't normally do. So it sometimes can be difficult to convince patients to do a trial like this, especially when they had a 33% chance of getting a placebo. But there was a large number of patients, over 700 patients who received this, and it was really tolerated well and easy to do. And I will stress that it can be a game changer moving forward in these patients in reducing their risk of recurrence, as well as the secondary endpoints of lowering their PSA, and the biopsy rates were, the negative biopsy rate was 80% in the treatment arm compared to the placebo, which was 64%, so that was statistically significant. So again, I'll just stress that this is really a game changer in our field. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Operator.
Thank you. To ask a question, please press star 11 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. To withdraw your question, please press star 11 again. If you have a question, please delineate who you will be like to direct the question to, either Dr. Sylvester or Dr. Tutrone or both, and or the Candle management team. Please stand by while we compile the Q&A roster. And the first question will come from Alec Stranahan with Bank of America. Your line is open.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking our questions and appreciate all the data updates that you guys shared. I guess maybe first question for Paul, Peter, and team. You know, as you guys get closer to approval and launch of 2409, how are you thinking about uptake in the market? Any color around patient selection or how you're thinking about staging versus ADT would be great. Then I've got a follow-up.
Yeah, great question. So we have started to do a lot of pre-commercialization work. We did very extensive market research and payer research recently, both in the U.S. and in the EU, which was already very positive in the past. This is a huge opportunity. But now we could actually do the market research with the data in hand, and I can tell you that the results look even better. Apologies for my voice. So we will seek most likely a broad label, right, which is completely aligned with the inclusion and exclusion criteria that were discussed by Garrett earlier in this call. So we will focus on intermediate to high-risk prostate cancer patients who have localized disease and who want to get rid of their tumor, right? These patients are willing to accept high risk, actually, of long-term complications of either radical prostatectomy or, in this case, radiotherapy. So think of urinary incontinence, erectile dysfunction, loss of quality of life, depression in many patients. Why do they do that? Because they want to be cured. So we try to increase the proportion of patients that will be free of tumor, and we believe that we've shown this very statistically significant but also clinically meaningful difference between CAN-2409 versus placebo. So we will most likely seek a broad label, but we're doing a lot of work at this time, also working with patient organizations, with key experts in the field to refine our statement.
Okay. And on the ADT point, I mean, you showed a distribution of ADT with varying levels of significance. Any thoughts around whether this would be used before or after, maybe for the company, but also for the KOLs on the call and sort of how they would use it?
Yeah. I will start, and then I will ask our external experts to chime in. So we've shown that we see the same trends for patients who received ADT or who did not receive ADT in the context of normal standard of care. Clearly, the study was not statistically powered to do all these subgroup analyses. But when you look at the sub-analysis, you see that all the midpoints are to the left, supporting the view that it works independent of ADT. Of course, we would hope that over time, less patients will need ADT. We would expect that if they don't have recurrence, they don't need salvage ADT, which is very important in terms of their future quality of life. But also, we could imagine that standard of care will change, actually. And we've shown, in particular, very profound effect of CAN-2409 in the patients who were not treated with ADT. So we would seek a broad label, but it's possible that standard of care will evolve over time based on the results that we presented today. So I'm going to ask Dr. Sylvester and Dr. Tutrone to respond to this as well. Who wants to start? Dr. Sylvester.
Sure. As far as the ADT question goes, obviously, even short-course ADT has some significant side effects, but much, much less than long-course ADT would have. And so it would be exciting if, with further studies, we can demonstrate that the use of this approach can perhaps reduce the need of ADT or the duration of ADT. For instance, if you look at brachytherapy data, the TRIP trial showed with high-risk patients, they get external beam and brachytherapy, and brachytherapy gives you a higher local control rate, similar to like what this does, that they only need 6 months of hormones. That 6 months of hormones was as good as 36 months. So in the future, it may be possible that high-risk patients that get external beam radiation without brachytherapy, if they get this approach, perhaps could get a shorter duration of hormone therapy rather than a long-term approach, which would be associated with a much better recovery rate of their testosterone, as shown in the TRIP trial, and better quality of life. And as far as the intermediate-risk patients, again, studies will have to be done on the unfavorable intermediate-risk patients to see if we can reduce or eliminate ADT in some of those patients. I have a feeling we'll have to also use genomics to help subdivide those patients.
Thank you very much. Dr. Tutrone?
Yeah, I would agree with Dr. Sylvester said, but I will add that in the trial, patients were only allowed to receive up to 6 months of hormonal therapy. And I think with the regulatory approval of this, that the standard of care will still hold, that we will use ADT in the unfavorable intermediate and high-risk patients. The real goal here, though, would be to eliminate the need for future use of ADT, which in most cases, when there's recurrence of the diseases, the patients will be on long-term hormonal therapy. And if we could reduce that in the long term, it's a big win.
Thank you very much. So I hope we answered your question.
No, yeah, that's perfect. Thanks so much for the color, and congrats on all the updates.
Yeah, thank you very much. Back to the operator.
And the next question will come from John Newman with Canaccord. Your line is now open.
Hi there. Congratulations on the data, and thanks for taking my question. A question for both physicians is, could you talk about the actual administration of the product in the clinic in the context of normal urology practice? Like, you know, whenever we look at drugs that are used to treat prostate cancer, we're always curious as to what the administration is like, whether it's at all cumbersome, whether it fits well your standard practice and the patient experience. Thanks.
Yeah, great question. Thank you very much, John, also for the congratulations. Dr. Tutone, do you want to start?
Sure. This is standard treatment in our office. It can be done through, we use a ultrasound guidance with a probe that's sort of like a digital rectal exam, and it's doing the treatment of the study drug. It's literally takes about 2 minutes to do. It's a 22-gauge needle, which is much smaller than what we use in a biopsy, which is typically 18-gauge or 16. So it involves four injections into the quadrants of the prostate and literally takes about 2 minutes to do. So this would add three visits during just before the patients begin their radiation therapy. They'd get an injection 2 to 8 weeks before beginning, and then around the time when they begin, they'll be seen again and have an injection. And then 2 weeks later, while they're starting their radiation, they have a third injection. So it does not really add much time, and it's not cumbersome to the office.
Thank you very much. These patients are seen and treated by both urologists and radiation oncologists. Dr. Sylvester, anything you want to add?
Yeah, so I agree exactly with what Ron was saying there. The first injection actually would not even really be an increase in another procedure, because we typically will have some gold fiducial markers placed in the prostate anyway before we start radiation. So in my practice, I did that first injection and inserted the gold fiducial markers at the same procedure. So it was only the next two injections, the first day of treatment and about a couple weeks later, that were extra. And exactly like Dr. Trone mentioned, it takes almost no time at all. It's just four sites you injected it, and one needle can hit two sites on each side. So it's only two needle punctures, a really skinny needle, very well tolerated. And so I think in practice, mainly urologists will be doing this. Radiation oncologists that do a lot of brachytherapy like myself can do it, but most radiation oncologists, I think, will defer to the urologist to do the injection, because they're usually putting the gold markers in anyway.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And the next question will come from Kemp Dolliver with Brookline Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Thank you. This is a question for both Dr. Sylvester and Dr. Tutrone. So what percentage of your prostate cancer treatment, prostate cancer patients meet these criteria for inclusion? And then how frequently do you see these patients when they're first diagnosed?
Sure, Dr. Sylvester. The vast majority of my patients are intermediate and high risk. Low-risk patients typically do active surveillance. Sometimes they come to us for treatment because they don't want to do active surveillance, a very small percentage of patients. And if you're in a community where the primary care doctors are doing PSA screening, you don't see a lot of de novo metastatic disease. So really the vast majority of patients would qualify for this protocol.
Dr. Dutron?
So, the if you look at all comers in our practice of patients who are diagnosed with prostate cancer, 40 to 50% are going to have a low risk Gleason grade group 6. And so most of those, as Dr. Sylvester alluded to, will be placed on an active surveillance protocol. Patients who have intermediate or high risk, which are going to be roughly 50% of patients, would be candidates to receive this therapy if they're getting radiation.
Thank you very much. Back to the operator.
And the next question will come from Oliver McCammon with LifeSci Capital. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for the update today and taking my question. Maybe for the KOLs on the call, I'm curious if you can just walk us through how the use of radiotherapy has changed for intermediate and high-risk localized prostate cancer patients over the past few years versus maybe turning to a radical prostatectomy, and then whether you think this dynamic could benefit the potential future uptake of KAN-2409. Thanks again for the question.
Thank you very much. Dr. Sylvester, do you want to start?
Sure. In terms of radiation oncology, the progress has been steady and pretty consistent, and it's gone to IMRT, which everybody uses now, using multiple fields intersecting and reducing the dose to the rectum. But it's gone further in terms of hypofractionation. So instead of giving 45 small treatments, we're giving more like 28 moderate treatments. And ultra hypofractionation, where we give 5 really big treatments. And so far, the studies comparing these have shown equal results with relatively equal long-term side effects, although the big NRG trial comparing hypofractionation to the ultra hypofractionated SBRT is still pending results. Now, what's also going on, though, simultaneously, is improvement in imaging, such as PSMA PET scans and MRI scans. And urologists are increasingly doing transperineal MRI fusion biopsies, so it's very common now for me to see patients that have a dominant lesion on one part of the prostate, and that's where their scans are positive, that's where their biopsies are positive. So what we can do is a simultaneous integrated boost, also known as FLAME, where the entire prostate gets a standard dose of radiation, but simultaneously where the cancer is, you get a higher dose of radiation. And the randomized trials show a significant improvement in relapse-free survival with zero increase in side effects. So there's continuous advancements going on in radiation, but even with these advances, there's always a risk of disease recurrence. And so anything we can do to further decrease the risk of local recurrence is going to benefit the patient, at least in terms of quality of life and maybe in other aspects as well.
Thank you very much. Dr. Tutone, anything you want to add?
Yeah, the only thing I'll add, Dr. Sylvester answered it beautifully, is in the practical world, and I'm seeing a patient after I biopsy them, and I'm seeing them as a urologist, and they ask me, should I have radiation or surgery? The answer I give my patients is that the surgery has the advantage of greater long-term cancer-free survival, and I define long-term in the disease as being greater than 20 years. And if somebody has a life expectancy greater than 20 years, then in my opinion, they're a good candidate for surgery, but they have to understand that surgery carries inherently greater risk than radiation does. So that's the only thing I'll add to it.
Thank you very much. Has your question been answered?
That was very helpful. Thank you again.
Thank you very much. Back to the operator.
And the next question comes from Alec Stranahan with Bank of America. Your line is open.
Yeah. Hey, guys. Just one more quick one from me, and maybe a bit of a higher level question for either or both of the KOLs. Would you ideally like to see an OS benefit, in the final data package, even if it's, say, not stat sig, but directionally positive? To garner use either in your practice or for your colleagues, or is DFS, really the most important clinical metric in this setting? Thank you.
Dr. Dutrone?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the FDA, in all the prostate cancer trials I do, they really do focus on OS or overall survival. But really, in the practical world, disease-free survival is really significant to me as a clinician, because if I could tell a patient they have a 30 to 40% chance of disease-free survival by getting this treatment and avoiding salvage therapies like Dr. Sylvester described before, it's a big win, because they're avoiding salvage therapies such as additional radiation or cryotherapy or HIFU, and most of them will also receive ADT long-term, which carries inherent risk of cardiovascular disease and dementia and bone loss. So to me, the short answer is OS in this trial is not as important to me. So that's my answer.
Thank you very much. Dr. Sylvester?
Yeah, I agree 100% with what Dr. Tutrone said. OS is going to be something that's going to be very hard to show in a trial like this, especially with prostate cancer. You need large numbers of patients, really long follow-up. But what's going on is the survival, overall survival, is getting longer and longer in patients, even with metastatic disease, because of all the advances with systemic therapies, the new generation oral antiandrogens, and the radiopharmaceuticals, and of course the regular antiandrogens. They're all really kicking the can down the road in terms of prostate cancer death. Well, what people don't always focus on is the toxicity of these treatments. And so while the person's still alive, if they've got to be putting up with continued treatments of androgen ablation, and then a next generation androgen ablation, and then chemotherapy, and then a radiopharmaceutical, and whatnot, the quality of life is not the same. So if you can decrease the local recurrence, decrease just recurrence in general, you can improve the quality of life and also save the country a lot of money on a lot of these very expensive treatments that will go on for the rest of the patient's life.
Okay. I totally agree with what has been said. I'll add the following. I'm not only the CEO of this company, but I've treated patients for 25 years, including patients with cancer. And we are huge fans of focusing on overall survival in indications where this is really the gold standard, like pancreatic cancer, like non-small cell lung cancer. I think here the hurdle is higher. We don't want patients just to live longer with cancer. We want these patients to live longer without any cancer and without any cancer-related anxiety and depression and all the side effects that were discussed by our colleagues here on the call. So this is a high hurdle in a way, and we seem to have achieved it. Thank you very much for the question. Back to the operator.
As a reminder, to ask a question, please press star 11 on your telephone. Okay, thank you. That concludes our question and answer. I will now turn the call back over to Dr. Paul Peter Tack.
Thank you, operator. Also, many thanks to everyone who is listening for joining our call today. I wish you a great day. Thank you very much.
This concludes today's teleconference. You may disconnect your lines at this time, and thank you for your participation.